Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by tonight. Tonight on our agenda, we are going to talk about 501c3s. Now, for those of you who don't know what that means, that is a status set by the IRS to be a not-for-profit organization. Now, as a rule, there are specific things that are 501c3s, charitable organizations, religious, educational, scientific, literary, testing for public safety, fosters amateur sports competition. That would be, I would guess, like the Olympics and the Special Olympics. Prevents cruelty to children or animals. And examples of those kind of organizations would be like old age homes, parent-teacher associations, charitable hospitals, alumni associations, schools, chapters of the Red Cross or Salvation Army, boys or girls clubs, and churches. Now, if you are a bona fide 501c3 and you've applied for that status from the IRS, then you are also eligible to receive grants. And you have to apply for them. And they are, people are able to donate to grow those grants and advertise as such for people who are, I know a lot of my older friends in particular are on lists. They receive mail all the time in regard to charitable organizations, hospitals, cruelty to animal organizations, of course, children organizations, where they need the contributions in order to survive. If you are a 501c3, you are exempt from federal and state taxes. So it's a lot more involved than this. There's a lot of red tape. There's a lot of bureaucracy as well, if you will, and a bit of politics. A lot of talk out there about how the Catholic Church is the richest organization in the world, and indeed it probably is. It's a not-for-profit organization. If you run an organization like this, if your goal is to help others and to do something that benefits mankind or animal kind, it's easy today with the help of a computer and a little know-how to apply for your own 501c3. Now, when I say easy, I don't mean easy like signing a piece of paper and filling out a couple sheets of paper and sending it. It is kind of lengthy, lots of filling out of papers, lots of gathering information to give to the powers that be so that you can achieve this. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up tonight is because I myself considered doing this, and Shelley, who is my co-anchor on Heart to Heart, she established a 501c3 several years ago because she ran a ferret rescue. And for those of you who think this must be a very easy way to make money because people donate and da-da-da, I hear a lot of that kind of talk. First of all, there's a lot of work involved if you're helping animals, if you're helping children, if you're helping the elderly, a lot of work. It's very labor-intensive. And there's very little monetary gratitude. Most of the people I know, not all, because we'll talk about some that are considerably successful and can make money, but it's different than just running a business and being able to say what you'll do and what you won't do. You have you have bylaws and you have standards that you have to follow. I'm going to bring Shelley in because she has a lot to add to this conversation. As I said, she, when I very first met her, was running a ferret rescue and had as many as 120-some ferrets that lived at her house. So, Shelley, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Hi, Rain.
How are you?
Doing good.
That's good. So tonight we are going to talk about the 501c3, which you and I talked about earlier, and I've kind of let people know that you you did apply for and receive a 501c3 for your ferret rescue. And I've read a little kind of a synopsis sort of what a 501c3 is.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many not-for-profits, different numbers. They all mean something different. But this is the one we're talking about tonight, and this one seems to be the most popular, the 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
So how about you take the floor and explain it in a little bit more depth, and then we're going to talk about some of the people we know, myself included, that have tried to do some things that will be better, at least from our point of view, and do something to help what's going on out there. There's a lot of problems out there with our foster children, with foster care, with animal care, and foster parents for animals, and our elderly. Our elderly is kind of at a not such a great place anymore either. So first, fill us in so that we all really get the gist and the benefits, kind of the pros and cons of of operating a 501c3.
Right, and one of the things you said a few minutes ago is that a lot of people think that like animal rescues in particular are money-making businesses, and nothing could be further from the truth. I worked in a network of animal rescues. A couple of the other ones were also 501c3s, and we really did have to jump through some hoops, so I'll explain that in a minute. But it was very difficult getting donations from people because they thought that that's how we made money, and in all the other rescues I dealt with, these were all people, including myself, that worked full-time, that were running these rescues out of their private homes on the side and using their own money. If they didn't get enough donation money, which most of us didn't, they were using their own funds then to pay bills, get supplies, and things like that. So the donations were really just offsetting the cost of something that these people, like I said, including myself, were doing out of a desire to help animals, help the community, to provide a solution for some of the needs of finding homes for these animals. In my particular case, it took me a year and a half to get my 501c3 status. So we did struggle in the beginning, because it was very difficult coming up with the funding, and we couldn't get any grants in the beginning at all. So we were completely reliant on people giving us a donation when they surrendered their animal, and we only asked for $35. So if you understand that it cost us several hundred dollars for each ferret that we took in to take care of that ferret, to feed it, get it litter, maybe get it some medical care, it cost us several hundred dollars per year per animal, and we were only asking for $35. So we were in the hole right out of the gate, just taking the animal in and only asking that. We got a lot of ferrets that were not adoptable because they were either too old or sick, and we had what was called a no-kill facility, which means we did not euthanize animals, even if they were not adoptable. They became a permanent resident of our rescue. And we had some, we operated for, I think it was 7 years by the time I shut it down, and I had some ferrets that were with us the entire time. And, and then when we shut down, I was able to adopt out to some of my sister organizations, some of the remaining ferrets, and then some of them had passed away just from old age. But like you said, it was a lot of hard work. At the busiest, we had 105 ferrets. and 35 other animals, because we also had cats and dogs. We had different areas of our house segregated. We had what was called a cat room. It was kind of neat the way we set it up. There were overhead runners, and we had some furniture in the middle of the room that were covered with carpet. The cats could run up and down the furniture. But we cleaned, we were cleaning, I mean, like 4 or 5 hours a day between the ferret area, the cat area, and the dog area. We didn't have that many dogs. It was mostly cats and ferrets. And at one time, we even had a couple of prairie dogs, which we also had to segregate from the ferrets, because prairie dogs and ferrets are mortal enemies. So we had to make sure that we kept them in areas where they couldn't get at each other, things like that. So it required some knowledge. We had to become expert in the different type of animals we help. And most rescues do become expert. They will, you'll have a raccoon rescue or a prairie dog rescue or in our case a ferret rescue, although we did help other types of animals. So that's one of the things. A lot of work goes into it. You have agencies, like you said, that help, you know, that help maybe children in distress or older people. But any of these organizations that are trying to help requires education, requires a lot of knowledge, and it's not easy to get the 501c3 status. Like I said, I submitted my paperwork. It cost me $1,500 to get my 501c3 status. And again, this was over 10 years ago, so that may have changed dramatically now. It was also more expensive to incorporate yourself now. So there may be simpler process as far as the initial filing, but what took so long is that the IRS kept sending paperwork back for additional verification of this, additional, that they wanted more description of of what we actually were doing with the ferrets, were we selling them, the operating, and they just kept coming back. And every time we answered, 3 months later, it would always take them 3 months to respond to us, and then they'd always have another question. And then we'd answer that question. So that one of the reasons it dragged out so long is just because of the time it would take the IRS to respond once we answered a question they asked, that kind of thing. So
right.
That kind of dragged it out. But once we got the 501c3, it did make it easier for us to then get some financial backing. We were able to finally submit for grants. I did get a couple of small grants, which helped. I was still putting a lot of my own money into the rescue, which is one of the reasons why I finally had to shut it down. Working a full-time job, I had, at my busiest, I had 8 wonderful full-time volunteers that were working for me that would come and clean and feed and help with the laundries and stuff. I was doing something like 14 laundries a week, just to keep the linens clean, so that to keep things smelling okay. And the litter, I was going through a pallet of litter every 3 months. So this was a pallet of litter cost me $1,500. So it was a very expensive endeavor, and people didn't realize how much money I had to spend to feed, litter, do laundries, laundry detergent and all this. And, they don't look at that. They just look at it, oh, it's one little animal. How much could it possibly cost you, And they don't realize whether it's an animal or a human being, their needs. They have to be fed. They have to be taken care of. If they get sick, there's vet bills, things like that. So a lot of people don't realize a lot of the ancillary costs that are involved in running any of these types of help organizations where you're taking on the needs of another, living being. So those are some of the challenges that I met, and we were pretty good at getting the $35 donation, but a lot of ferrets were just found abandoned. Any ferret that we got from Animal Care and Control, and I would say in the beginning, minimally 50% of our ferrets were coming from Animal Care and Control without a donation, because Animal Care and Control didn't pay us to take them. It was an agreement we had with them. We were actually contracted by Animal Care and Control until they started taking ferrets on of their own. But but it was a lot of hard work. It was very rewarding. It was something that I still miss to this day, because I thoroughly enjoyed it. But it just wasn't enough hours in the day to keep it up and work full time and do everything else. And like I said, that's not how I was making my money. I was making my money at a full-time job to pay the extra bills that weren't paid from grant money and things like that that I got.
Right. Well, and I think you should also mention to everybody that
along with taking, for all intensive purposes, orphans, albeit from the ferret families. They were orphans, and many of them were in need of veterinarian care. And I know for a fact that many of them you would nurse with natural ways because you are, you know, you're interested in that and you're very knowledgeable in that, but sometimes it would require a veterinarian.
Right, right. Well, in the first year and a half, we took a lot of them to the veterinarian until we realized that the procedures that they were putting the ferrets through and the medications they were giving them weren't helping them, that the ferrets that we didn't get to a vet for whatever reason were actually faring better than the ferrets that we were bringing to the vet. So we over time, we started utilizing more holistic methods. We had gotten involved with a group called Broward Ferret Rescue and Referral Agency. They were a 501c3 also down in Broward County. Very, very educated people, and they were like, they considered us like a sister agency to them. So we would help each other. They would take ferrets that were down south, and then we would take ferrets that were up in the north. And we helped each other out with materials and cages and things like that. So we would go to their meetings. They had meetings monthly, things like that. But one of the things.
So you kind of helped each other.
Right. And they were the ones who taught us a lot of these holistic approaches. Because they found the same thing we did. So we started you know, like comparing notes, so to speak. And things like prednisone and some of the surgeries they were doing on the adrenal gland disease is a very, very prevalent disease with ferrets. And we found that sometimes the surgery didn't make them any better. If anything, it might have shortened their lives. So we started coming up with different nutritional ways of dealing with some of the very, very common ailments that started plaguing ferrets because of the way they were overbred. And so we compared notes, and it worked out very well. We were able to help each other. There were things that we knew from rehabilitating. We kind of specialized in rehabilitating vicious biters, so we shared that with their group, and their group shared with us some of the holistic and nutritional ways of dealing with some of their health issues instead of relying so much on veterinary care. And it was a wonderful relationship. We were, I think we dealt with each other for maybe 4 or 5 years of the time that we ran this.
Well, and I think on saying that, it's worth us. The fact that when you have organizations like this that work together, it's a win-win situation.
I think
a lot of cases, especially here lately with me so involved in some of the things in the medical arena, I do see together, I don't want to say that I don't see that, but I also see a severe dropping of the ball. Other people kind of lose interest, and instead of working so much like a team, they're not afraid to pass you on to somebody. But
right. There's
no follow after the ball is passed. And one of the things I know personally about the way you were doing things, that was not the case, because one day you helped them, the next day they helped you, and of course that's the perfect
right.
way to do anything like that. We also have another friend who has been on the show before, who is runs a rescue that mostly takes in horses, and she has some incredibly sad stories and some incredibly beautiful stories. Shelley and I have known her for a long time, and as I said, she's talked on the show, and we one night had one of her new associates on who's doing the magical ponies, as I did for a while. And again, taking care of ponies and horses is incredibly expensive.
Right.
Forget
right.
They eat, and they eat a lot because that's all they do is eat and poop. So they get, you know, and so it's a very expensive venture. But they, in particular, have very exorbitant medical bills if anything happens.
Mm-hmm.
Horses have,
yep.
believe it or not, seem like all the sayings we hear, you eat like a horse. Well, if you really eat like a horse, you have a very sensitive digestive system. Most horses are very picky about what they eat, and if they eat something that doesn't agree with them, they can die. They cannot just get violently ill and die. And it's a very expensive thing to do, and many times she would get, and still does, get rescue horses that have been horribly, horribly abused. So, again, animal rescues, places that take care of animals, of course, the Humane Society. We have, what's the lady's name that's here in here in Palm Beach? All of a sudden her name is escaping. Peggy Adams. She has a wonderful rescue.
Yeah.
And we know a lot of people, you know, that are involved with her as well. In our cheering section, I want to say that at Hippocrates we had many feral cats. And thanks to the donation of guests and staff members, we collected feral cats for over 4 months and would get them and take them over and have them fixed and then bring them back and let them stay on the property, but, you know, fixed it so there wasn't so much reproduction.
I ended up being blessed with one of those little guys as my buddy now.
Me too. I have Lily, who came from Hippocrates. So
I have Pumpkin, who I adore.
Yes. But the biggest reason I wanted to bring this up tonight is because we all talk about all the things that are wrong in the care and the follow-through and the support of our youth. We talk about the bullying. We talk extensively about picking on other kids. Such occasionally, and I have read statistics about the fact that most children are bullied in the home more often than they are bullied at school. Very sad fact, but a fact nonetheless. And in many cases, especially here in Florida, for whatever reasons, kids are left. Young teens, preteens, tweens, as they call them, are left here sometimes. Mom and dad, or just mom or just dad, show up here and decide they're going to live here because they think it's going to be easy street because they don't have to stay warm, for one thing. It's always warm. And they'll stay for a while and things don't pan out and they leave, and they leave the kids here. And when I first left my job, I thought I could open a place called Grandma's House. And I started setting up and realizing everything I would need. And I don't have an overflow of money. I take care of quite a few people already. Or shall I say, we all take care of each other because funds are limited. And thought, into it, trying to figure out how I could make it work, I realized the red tape was way too much for me. And I did find some people through Shelley, some legal representation that was going to help me and everything. But even with that, I just didn't have some of the answers that they wanted, because until I got it operating, I couldn't answer their questions because I didn't know how I was going to make it work. I thought that if I opened a house and had help paying a mortgage or rent on a house and the utilities and everything, and I could get one of these organizations that deliver food to places like that, that's plentiful right now. Deliveries is very, very easy to have accomplished today. So I thought I could make it work. And you have to be careful who you bring in. There would have to be, you know, many, many rules. At the end of the day, it couldn't be simple. I wanted it to be the kind of place where my own grandchildren come here. If they don't know where else to go, or they're mad at their mom, or they're mad at their dad, or something's going on at home, and they just need to get away, they come here. And I thought I could do that for lots of kids and not let them live with me forever or live in that house forever, but just a place to come where they felt safe, where they could get a hot meal, wash their clothes, take a shower, and have a bed to sleep in a couple nights, and then very often go back home. Shell, we got an awful lot of static tonight. You must be driving through something.
No, I keep losing you, except I'm looking at my phone, and I have a full antenna, yet you keep dropping off. Like I don't hear any static at all, but I just keep losing you completely, where I'm not hearing anything you're saying.
Must be when I hear static, you just don't hear anything, because I get
right.
lots of static on this side.
Maybe I should hang up and try to call back in, see if I get a better connection.
Well, it's better right now. I had you on speakerphone, so I won't put you on speakerphone now. I'll just talk on the phone like this. This seems to be fine right now. Let's see how this works.
Okay.
Okay? But
yeah.
The point I'm trying to make is I tried to do something, but in the meantime, I got involved with another organization of young people, very young people, all young people who have been in the system, so to speak, for any number of reasons. Sometimes because something happened to mom, sometimes because there never was a mom and they lived in foster homes most of their life, and sometimes it was because, you know, things had just changed in their life and they were no longer comfortable at home, and you just don't sign into an orphanage. I think everybody knows that. You just don't all of a sudden decide you can't live at home anymore for whatever reasons and decide to move into an orphanage. It doesn't work that way. You have to be removed from your parents' home. You have to be legally subjected to all kinds of questions and answers, and your parents have to be put under a microscope. And a lot of times kids, because of their loyalty, don't want to do that. They don't want to hurt
right.
their mother and father. They just know that things aren't right. Maybe mom and dad just aren't equipped to take care of them. So a lot of times they go into the foster system. If they hit it good and get into a wonderful foster home, which some of them do, absolutely, positively, that's true, then they have a chance. And our government has got it set up so that as long as that child stays in the system, stays in school, maintains a certain GPA, behaves themselves, they can even get out of high school and have college paid for with a stipend so that they can live until they're out of college. Now, a lot of us parents can't even do that for our children. So when I found that out, I was like, that's awesome. Why are we trying to fix something that's not broken?
Right.
And my answer was that many kids have problems. They don't stay in school. They get out of the system because either there's too many rules and they just aren't equipped to deal with them. Or in some cases, they have a kind of seesawing mom and dad. One minute they're there and the next minute they're gone. So then that takes them out of the system because they can't be reliable and they can't focus on what they're supposed to be doing with the system. So these kids end up in kid limbo. So I meet these young people who want to do something about that because it's happened to all of them. And now
right.
they're 18, 19, 20, 21, that age arena. They hear me speak at the Atlantic Center and ask me to sit on their board of directors. And I say, absolutely, I am so proud of all of you. I just can't believe that, you know, this is what you want to do. And they have so many dreams to be able to help kids and to make sure kids stay in school and make sure kids do what's going to serve them when they're not a kid anymore. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. Teach them enough so that it serves them when they're a grown-up and there's no grown-ups around
to do anything for them, and they can take care of themselves, right? I mean, that's the whole idea.
And it serves the community. If you can, if you make them,
absolutely,
you know, self-reliant, that helps the community.
Well, and it along with adding to the community, they take away a lot of the bad stuff. They take away a lot of the violence. They take away a lot of the theft. They take away
right.
a lot of the things that a lot of young people do when survival mode kicks in. And, you know, not every kid who turns out bad and steals and does things like that does it because they have a drug problem. I hope everybody realizes
right.
that. Sometimes they steal because they have no food. Sometimes they steal because if they want to stay in school, they have to have decent clothes and nobody's around to buy them for them, so they steal them. There's lots of reasons why some kids do the things they do, and they aren't always bad reasons. Not right,
right.
to do what they're doing, but their reasoning is, you know, they feel like they're between a rock and a hard place. So at any rate, I know this organization, and they are trying so hard, and they've gone through every loophole, but there is no money. None of these young people have any money to speak of, and they are... One of them is running for a seat with the county commission. And now he's got people slinging mud at him. And I am very upset about this because instead of embracing what these young people are trying to do in the world of politics, they're going to try to find something wrong with what they're doing. And, of course, now because it's gotten like this, there's only limited things that they can say or do to make anybody even believe what it is that they're doing is good. So the whole reason we're talking about this tonight is so that people understand. A 501c3, because you're tax exempt, does not mean that you're going to be rich. And these kids are not looking to get rich. They don't even talk about money. As a matter of fact, I tried to get them to understand that they needed to have money to get it going. Their whole thought process comes from their hearts, not from their heads. And yet, they're being...
One thing that I didn't say before, which before you continue, is kind of relevant to what you're talking about, is that I had explained to you that when you do get grant money, when you actually, like I said, I was operating for over a year and a half without the 501c3, and it was very difficult to keep our head above water. But once we got the 501c3, I was concerned about if I got a grant that exceeded what I needed annually. And the way it was explained to me is that in order to maintain your 501c3 status, and you have to be auditable, if you get a grant money, say it cost me $20,000 a year to operate the ferret rescue, and I got a grant mm-hmm. for $25,000, I don't have to not accept that or pay taxes on the $5,000. I can roll the $5,000 into the next year, or I can do improvements on the animal rescue. It just can't inure to my personal benefit. In other words, I can't use the money to put a pool in my backyard or buy a new car or something like that. But if the excess money over operating expenses is used to get better cages or to create another area so I can take on more animals, if it goes to the structure and benefit of the rescue itself, that's permissible. It just can't go to the personal benefit of any of the directors or people that are operating the rescue. And then you have to have complete disclosure of finances where every penny goes. So somebody who's operating with the intention of getting a 501c3, but they don't have it yet, they're still going to be under scrutiny of where the money is going right now, but they can certainly get donation money. Like I was getting donation money in the beginning. I just let people know that I wasn't 501c3 certified yet and that they could not use their donation as a tax deduction. No, it's the people donating to me could not use their donation as a tax deduction. So it deterred a lot of people from giving me donations, but they certainly could donate, and I certainly could accept those donations. That's the only that was the only thing that was a little difficult.
Okay, but let's talk now. Something you just said, I don't want people to misunderstand one thing. If you run, if you're running a church, say you have a ministry and you've built a church and all your people help you build the church and they all donate every Sunday and all your parishioners are a part of this community, and the only way for you to put gas in your car and food on your table is to get a paycheck or a stipend, whatever you want to call it, a salary, you can do that. But that has to be brought before your board of directors, has to be voted on, and it has to be in sync with how much money is being generated by your organization.
That's correct. And, right. 501c3s can pay salaries and things like that. And again, the money collected can go for the operational. A perfect example is PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Now, that is a huge organization. They do have volunteers that work for them, but they also have a full staff, administrative staff, customer service people. They sell products. Okay, so part of what they are doing is profit, and part of what they do is nonprofit. And the whole thing is that the donations that come in, you can get their financials at any given moment, and it shows how much goes for administrative needs. But yes, being a 501c3 does not mean that you can't take in a salary, because some of these organizations, that is what they do full time. So they need to be able to survive in order to perpetuate what the organization is doing. So churches, animal rescue agencies, a lot of your like medical, like cancer research and things like that. Although I don't like donating to that, but that's another example. That a lot of these organizations take the money in and use it to pay administration. And so that's where you want to look at the financial statements of these organizations. Generally speaking, the animal agencies are very low on the administration side and higher on the activities to benefit animals, where a lot of the medical research is the opposite. They're very, very heavily laden with the money going to administration and a lot of the staff, and not so much going in for appropriate research. So that's why I say that I stopped donating to medical research many, many years ago and just started putting most of my money into animal agencies, because I felt the way the money was used was more ethical.
Well, I think a lot of people feel that way, but that's what bothers me about what's happening to these young people right now, is the fact that, as I said, money is the last thing, and I mean this literally, on their mind. They've tried to do all kinds of things and pay for them themselves. They've tried to do fundraisers and everything, and it's ended up costing them more money than any of them have.
Right.
And it's sad, because what they want to do is to just help a little bit and make a difference. And it's one of the things that we talk about on this show all the time, that people need to care more, do more, not just say more, but do more. And here you've got these young people whose heads are on straight, mind you. They get all excited and they go off in a tangent. I think that's why they brought me in. I'm supposed to be the leveler, right? And they'll get all excited about something. I'll say, no, wait. We have to work this out, and you have to do this, and you have to do that. But they're wonderful, and it's all about them wanting to see things be better. And I see so much of that. Like I said, when I first started this show, when I first started going around and talking to people after what happened to my grandson, I was blown away by how many wonderful people are out there doing things that nobody ever hears about. Nobody.
That's right.
That's right.
You know, the family that does car washes and bake sales and everything and gives money to cancer patients because they can't pay their utilities. Now, who would even think of that?
I know. It's extraordinary.
You know, it was beautiful. Or the lady that goes out and her and all of her neighbors and everything raise money by doing, again, car washes and bake sales and white elephant sales and all this kind of stuff, and they take all the money and go out and buy a whole bunch of book bags and hand them out free at school.
Wow.
It's you know, it's those little things that make the United States of America who it is, what it is.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But In our attempt to make sure that there's guidelines, we've tied everybody's hands behind their backs. And let's face it, if you're trying to raise a family, if you're trying to finish school, if you're trying to figure out how you're going to get first, last, and security and a deposit on your electricity and live someplace that doesn't have an old lady in it, then you have to be able to dedicate some time to that part of your life, too. So then you get involved in something like this and want to make a difference. It's kind of hard to do both things at the same time if you're not going to be able to work with everything you have to work with. And
In our
effort, you know, this is just like we said the other day when we talked about TSA and all this kind of stuff, all the leaking of everything, and I'm thinking to myself, we talked at breakfast about party lines. You remember one of the girls at the breakfast table said, remember when we had party lines? And I said,
Of course I do.
I remember party lines. I said, and we have them again now, but we just don't know who's listening anymore. But we've had party lines. Right?
That was a comment.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, well, it is. And at the end of the day, it doesn't make much more difference than old Ethel who lived down at the end of the street listening to your business than this does, if the truth be known.
No,
I mean,
no.
unless you're running some kind of covert affairs or something, then, of course, everybody wants those people to be heard. But I'm talking about us everyday people.
Yeah, yeah. I got to tell you, people are listening into my conversations. My sister and I have some pretty colorful ones, and they're in for an earful. So, hey, have at it, guys.
Yeah, well, that's the way I feel, too, you know. It's kind of like, you know, have a wonderful time. Why am I bothering to write a book if you're all going to listen to my phone conversations?
Well, you know, what's funny is that lately, and I don't know if a lot of the other listeners are experiencing this. This has been going on for a couple of months, but in the last week it's gotten even worse. I've been hearing, like, I'll be in the middle of a conversation with somebody. It's happened probably about a dozen times in the last 2 weeks, and all of a sudden, I hear, like, a group of people talking. It's almost like I'm connected to like, a party or something, and I'll hear all kinds of distracting noises, and I ask the other person, I say, where are you? And they say, I'm in my kitchen. Where the hell are you? What is that? And we hear all these distracting noises, or we hear other people talking, and then all of a sudden, and then it's gone. And it's like, what the heck was all that? That's been happening a lot for about mostly in the last 2 weeks. It's almost like a cross connection, or somebody getting into our call somehow. And it's like, whatever, you know. So I mean, I'm not overly concerned about it because, like you, I don't talk about anything that I would care. But it is something that I've noticed, and I've heard a couple other people say that they've had some of the similar experiences. So.
Yeah, for sure. I hear all that too, and sometimes I pick up my cell phone and it goes tick 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 until the number goes through. And I feel like saying, hi, this is Renee. How are you? You know, thanks for joining me, just like I do on the show, right? But
the point
here is.
What is being said about this group of young people? I mean, because you said that they're getting some ridicule, but what is actually the ridicule? What are they being accused of? Or what's the mudslinging?
Well, just mudslinging, nothing in particular. I said they're probably finding fault in the fact that they found out, they looked it up, because it's, you know, it's common knowledge, or what's the word I want for it. If you're registered for anything, you can find that out. I mean, you're supposed to be able to, the public's supposed to be able to know anything like that that's going on. So whoever it is found out that the kids don't have their 501c3 yet. And in that are just making it sound, you know, like they're doing a whole bunch of illegal things and making people think that they've got something going on and they're donating money to them and everything. And I said, well, doesn't your bank account speak for itself? And you know, they laughed. And I said, well, I that's what it's all about. It's because people think that you're doing something because nobody trusts anybody anymore. But the truth of the matter is, you know what you're doing. You haven't done anything wrong. You just need to understand that this is what happens when you're trying to do something like this and get involved in politics at the same time. Look at Jimmy Carter. Remember when Jimmy Carter did Habitat for Humanity? Remember when he did that and had all these different organizations build homes, low-income homes and everything? And I remember reading things about how much of a kickback he got and how much work got done on his own private properties, his kids' properties and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, my good God. Don't these people have anything else to do? I mean, really. Don't they have anything else to do? Here's somebody doing something that's good,
something good
and kind. Well, yeah.
But see, the point of the matter is that you don't have to be a 501c3 to solicit donations. It's just that you have to make sure that you let people know you're not a 501c3, because most people assume that when they make a donation, only 0% 501c3, you're not doing anything. You know, if...
Okay, now I'm losing you again, Shell. I think I lost her completely this time again.
Is that any better?
You are now, but the whole last minute and a half, I didn't hear anything but shorthand.
Okay, well, let me try to say it again real quick then. The bottom line is, as long as you don't represent yourself as collecting tax-deductible donations, you're not doing anything wrong. It's really up to the person donating to find out whether or not you are a 501c3. It's not your responsibility to tell them whether you are or not, but you cannot represent that donations to you are tax deductible if you don't have that category, that 501c3. I mean, there's a lot of organizations that collect money that never got that classification, and yet they donate, and I've donated to them. I asked them, I said, are you 501c3 certified? And they're like, no. And then I made a decision whether or not I cared if I was going to be able to use that donation or not. You see what I'm saying? But
yeah,
there's
that was the advice I gave.
Right. There's nothing. But the only thing is, and the bottom line is, if they have some sort of a business or an LLC or a fictitious name, or if they have something that they're going to file, the bottom line is, if they're spending more than they're getting in, they're not going to have to pay income tax anyway, because their profit and loss statement is going to show them at a loss.
Right.
Oh, it's
right.
You know, so they're okay there also, as far as taxes are concerned. So whoever's slinging mud at them is slinging mud at them just to discredit them, so that, you know, so that they're not able to move forward against them, whatever. But it's a shame, because, like you said, what a waste of effort when you have these kids that are trying to make a difference. Why wouldn't you support their efforts? Why would you throw mud at them?
Exactly.
It's ludicrous.
Yes, it is. And you know, it makes you, well, we've always said this, you know, in my history as a manager, as a mother, as anybody who's been asked to make a choice about who's right and who's wrong ever, if there's one person who continually comes to me and reports bad things about someone else, that's who I always start looking at. Because it's like a big flag that says, you know, please don't look at me, you should be looking at Shelley. Please don't look at me, you should be watching Renee. please don't look at me because I'm really the one who's doing everything wrong and I want to be able to get away with it.
That's right.
It's the truth. And you know, well, we had a friend who worked with us who used to say, when you point your finger at somebody else, there's always three pointing back at you. And that is true, but only if people are paying attention. Otherwise, you could point fingers at yourself all day and nobody cares. It's almost always people listen, though, if you're bad-mouthing someone else. And that's what makes it so dangerous.
Yeah,
but if
and
you're
I've never
continually...
quite understood that. It is pretty commonplace for people to listen to that. I'm one of the few people I know that whole thing, I don't like hearing bad things about people. I really don't want to know. I don't like gossip. I don't like rumors. First of all, it makes me feel bad. It's kind of low energy type stuff, you know.
Yep.
If I have to hear something constructive about somebody so that maybe I can help them, maybe they're not doing something right and they need some additional training, I'll look at it that way. But not for the sake of just making somebody look bad. That's such a low energy.
Well, and it's really a poor way to spend your time. It really doesn't serve you in any way. I mean, I can't imagine. It's just like the people that do things like this, you have to wonder, you know, what their insides look like.
Yeah.
Because they probably don't smell very good inside, and there's probably lots of, I don't know, dark, stinky areas in there that make them feel like it's a necessary part of their life and their routine to make other people look bad. I just don't get it myself. But I guess the biggest point I wanted to make tonight was the fact that there are organizations out there that are trying very hard to make a difference. We have to be open. Don't be pushovers. But we have to be open when we see somebody trying. Research, look at their websites, see what it is they're doing, what they're not doing. If they're trying to just get on their feet and you believe in what they're doing, then you should support them. I'm not saying, you know, write a check. I don't mean that, although that's nice if you can. But I'm saying support them. We need all the help we can get. I've told you stories about teachers who come in early in the morning and let kids use the facilities in schools or save recycled clothing so that kids have clothes to wear, or shower gets turned on so a couple kids can come in the morning because there's no water at their house. I've told you all those stories. So you have to know that there's a lot of kids out there, and, of course, we've talked at length about how many kids are in the streets, and about prostitution in the streets, and about mental illness in the streets. There's too much of that. And here in Florida, because we don't have, I mean, we have hurricanes to worry about, but we don't have the snow, the sleet, and the hail, and 7 months of freezing-ass weather. We most of the time could be outside. And that's why so many of those young people get left here. So when you find somebody who wants to make a difference and wants to do something that's going to serve us in a very, very good way, in a way that lifts us up instead of brings us further down, we should be paying attention to that, certainly not fighting them. If you think they're doing something wrong and you want to investigate, that's fine. But idle gossip is, you know, what is that old saying? Idle gossip is the devil's toy or something like that. It is.
Yeah.
It is. And it doesn't serve anybody. So if you find somebody like these young people, I am going to do everything in my power to help them. I've been helping them for 3 years. I will continue to help them until they get themselves in a place where they can truly make a difference. And I think they will. I really think they will. And I also think that politics could be involved in it, because then they'd have a much larger stepping stone to play from.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, you know, one of the things that can you hear me right now? Because my antenna is
doing
stupid things.
Yes, I hear you good. I hear you good right now.
One of the things I will tell you, you just said something a moment ago, it doesn't always mean that you have to write a check, and that's true. I could not have survived for the number of years I did, especially when my numbers got over 100 of animals, if I didn't have volunteers. So although I needed financial backing, and I was able to get some grants and things like that, like I said, and I got a couple of private individuals who donated me very generously. I had one man who actually donated a couple thousand dollars, and it came at a time when I really needed it. But the other thing was is that it was just too much for me as a single person to do. It required too many hours, and with me working full-time, I would have had to close my doors years earlier than I did if it weren't for the fact that I had volunteers. So any organization, this group of young people that you're talking about, other types of organizations that whether it's helping animals or doing something for the community, all these types of organizations always need volunteers. So if you don't have financial backing, you should really look into volunteering in your community because there's so many opportunities to get involved and make a difference. And it actually it uplifts your quality of life because you see yourself involved in the solution instead of just sitting back and saying, oh, my God, everything's so out of control. When you start seeing yourself as part of the solution, you start feeling more empowered and more involved. So not only are you helping the people where you're donating your services, but it's also very, very uplifting to our characters. Because before I ran my own animal rescue, I had spent 15 years in volunteering for all different types of organizations and already kind of knew what it felt like. It was very, very rewarding to me, very appreciated by the organizations I helped, but it also made me feel better about things. And like I said, feel more connected, feel part of the solution and things like that. So it's very powerful. Volunteering is a very powerful practice to get involved in.
Well, you know, hospice, which is one of the most successful organizations that's out there today, and their reputation is one of the best, and they really, really function with volunteers. And I'll tell you, remember I mentioned the hospital that Spike was in for his last procedure, which was in Boca Raton, and I told you how lovely everybody was? Well, let me tell you, probably aside from nurses and doctors and the cleaning staff, everybody else that sits at a desk on the outside, except the security officer, too, I should mention that, are volunteers, pink ladies, what we used to call pink ladies, and pink gentlemen. And they're wonderful, and they're happy to be socializing. They're happy to see you. They have so much fun. The whole time I was in the waiting room, I giggled at all of them because they were having a ball. You'd have thought that they were at some kind of a cocktail soiree. I mean, they were having a ball, and they made everybody feel welcome. They weren't grumpy or anything. They were sweet and gentle and kind, and they volunteered their day, and they stayed for 3 or 4 hours. And then the next shift comes in, or some of them stagger in. I thought it was beautiful. So there's a lot to be said, again, for volunteers. And you're right, volunteering your time is sometimes the biggest gift you can give to anybody, even if you're talking about a friend. So giving somebody some of yourself is often a lot more important to them than handing them a check. So I guess... I hope that, like I said, I'm going to do some things tomorrow to help these young people and see what I can do, and we'll move forward, and I will keep everybody posted because this organization, once it takes off, will be something that touches everybody's lives, I think, in one way or another. So, but I want to thank everybody tonight for tuning in, and thank you, Shelley. We will be on the air tomorrow night. I'm not sure what the topic is. I'm trying to get somebody to call in and talk tomorrow night, somebody I've been trying to reach for a little while, but I will let you know. But thank you very much, and I think we gave out some decent information tonight, and I hope that helps people understand a little bit about 501c3s and what not-for-profit actually means. So, from my heart to yours, everybody, good night and God bless. Good night, Shelley. Talk to you tomorrow, sweetheart.
Okay, hon. All right. Good night, Renee. Good night, everyone.